going on, y'all? And thank you again so very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, the fearless hunter himself, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios.
Dude, the weather is warm. Look, big ups to everybody dealing with the fires. Look, we got Nebraska fires. There's tornadoes. There's flooding. Like, it's a wild time. So I hope everybody out there is doing well. Hope you've had a great week. Hope you're having a good time. You got a great week coming up.
That's right. I hope everybody had a good Memorial Day.
Heck yeah. Did everybody? And you know what? I want everybody to take a little chance here. We're early. We're getting started early here. Don't lose any fingers during 4th of July. All right, folks, let's not do that. I was witnessing something on television the other day, one of those police patrol shows, and a dude had two Roman candles in Florida that he had bought, right? Mm-hmm. So he lights them. Now, we've all lit them. Kyle and I and several friends back in high school had a giant Roman candle war.
Oh, that was not once.
See,
all the time.
And they was like 50 of us shooting Roman candles at each other. It was a good time. We never had them blow up. This one blew up.
I've been burned by them, though.
I've been burned, but this thing blew up on the show like dynamite. This was like a reality show. Like I said, one of them cop shows blew the dude's fingers off of both. They didn't know they were going to be able to save his hands. And it says, you know, don't hold them in your hands. Everybody holds them in their hands. Now, that one time at my house, I had it blow out the bottom and catch my shirt on fire. That was pretty funny. Wasn't like a huge fire. It burned a hole about, I don't know, big as a softball or something in the shirt. It wasn't no big deal.
Yeah, come on. Second degree burn. We jumped in the water.
Dude, it wasn't crazy. We're out at the tank on the dock. Choo, choo. Oh, I'm on fire. And you jump in there. It's like some crazy 80s Fall Guy show, right? Was what was going
on. You're
going
to get burnt sometimes. You're going to cut yourself sometimes. Yeah, you're going to accidentally shoot yourself sometimes. Yeah, I mean, that's just called life, right?
It just happens. Just everybody be careful coming up. We got some time to build, right? We're a good 30 days out. Don't anybody, it's 250. Don't anybody go crazy and blow their fingers off. And if you're going to do it, do one that's not important. Don't lose a thumb. All right. That's all I'm saying.
Well, there's a whole generation of people that don't even watch fireworks. They just watch drone shows.
Hey, those are pretty cool.
They're pretty cool, but it's lame. Let's play with explosives. Come on, man.
You're preaching to the choir now. I mean, there's gunpowder right behind you.
As a kid, you wouldn't take 30 to 40 fireworks, crack them open, and put all the powder into one mega charge. You never did that? I know you did. You take the roll from like a toilet paper roll or like a push pop, then you put all that gunpowder in there. You get you some can infuse, you get stop, you some duct
stop,
tape.
Stop. You can't explain this to people.
Oh, you destroy somebody's mailbox instantly. You never thought about wearing safety goggles.
I stopped and bought fireworks coming back from Colorado, right past, I'm trying to think where it was, the little town. But anyway, it's right in there. It's not far from Tucumcari. They had a firework thing in one of those big truck stop deals.
Yeah.
And one half of it's plumb full of fireworks. Of course, I buy them every time I go, but it's not the pretty ones. I buy Black Cats. Stacks of them, right? Mm-hmm. Because I like to just, boom, it reminds me of being a kid. You get the gunpowder smell, the sulfur smell. Imagine.
You throw those at each other too. It's fun.
Of course. Shoot them at each other with slingshots. Like, that's just what went down.
You catch crawdads and you put them in their claws and you light them and you see what happens. It's fun.
You know what happens. You try to stand.
Sorry, PETA, don't come after me.
Try to hold them in your hands. So they do all kinds of stuff. It's just fireworks. I mean, it's just like little ones, but not like, I don't know. They didn't post it up. But down here in Texas, we only get them twice a year. We don't have them year-round. They'd only let us.
They're not year-round, but back then, right. Now they sell them at every holiday.
It's kind of getting that way, yeah. But we got to be careful because it'll burn everything off down here, too, when it gets hot and dry.
Yeah, they don't. You're not allowed to have those bottle rockets no more.
It's probably a good thing. It's probably a real good thing because you allegedly there was a fire set. We've told that story before when I was accosted by a bottle rocket that was shot at me like a Laws tube. Like, looked like the Red Dawn film at the beginning when he RPGs and misses the truck. Kyle didn't miss my truck. Hit me in the windshield.
It looked like the old Red Dawn with the RPGs. I go, oh,
again, I forgot there was a new Red Dawn. You're like, just stop. There's only one Red Dawn.
Right. I agree. It's on Tubi TV. You can watch it right now.
Yeah, I got here a little something that might be slightly unsettling for all y'all listening. Kyle, I think you're going to like this. It involves an Oklahoma hunter.
Okay.
Yeah,
tell me more.
That's right. A hunter. It says, I was rabbit hunting on a farm outside of Maud, Oklahoma, between approximately 9:30 p.m. This is Central Standard, and 11:15 p.m. Central Time. It was clear, cold night with a quarter moon overhead. I was armed with a pump action tactical shotgun. and a Kimber 5-inch 45 caliber pistol.
Nice choice.
Right? Right? But what was, you give me the shotgun, but you didn't give me the brand, but you had to throw in the Kimber part, right?
If he's got pistol. A Kimber, then he's probably rocking something pretty good.
What do you think?
Like a Benelli.
I knew you was going to say that. So, it says, I love this dude. I had about 100 rounds of 45 ammo and shotgun shells with me.
Go rabbit hunting? How many magazines is that? A 45 Kimber probably only holds...
7?
Yeah.
How big are those rabbits? Hey, it's not going to be because of lack of
shooting. So this guy's got like 15 magazines on him.
Strapped. Says both weapons were equipped with high-end white lights. At about 11:15, I returned home and walked up onto my patio, which is about 5 foot off the ground. That's when I saw a large human-like figure standing nearby. It was bigger than any man I had ever seen. I activated the Surefire white light on my shotgun to get a better look.
See, this guy's got high-end gear. Because Surefire flashlight, that's about $300. Or you can go and get a cheap one off Amazon for like $50. So this guy's not messing around.
$50 for the cheap. So because of the fog, I could only see about 25 foot ahead of me with the light. But the shotgun could see a lot further. No, it doesn't say that. Says the figure was far enough out in the open that I could make out its outline. Before this happened, I had already noticed my animals acting strangely. More than once during the hours of darkness, I had the strong feeling that I was being watched. And the figure was watching me, and we made eye contact. It was very large, close to 7 or 8 foot tall, extremely stocky. I would estimate it weighed over 400 pounds. And when I pointed my shotgun at it, the figure seemed annoyed. It didn't appear to be afraid of me, my weapons, or my animals. My dog, which is a military-trained dog, cowered down and would not respond to my commands. That reaction bothered me deeply. I later contacted a Bigfoot team, and they arrived within 72 hours of the encounter. No physical evidence was found. There were no footprints, no hair. There was nothing left behind. Afterwards, I experienced lapses in my memory. I am a retired Special Forces sniper with 10 years of experience and 3 tours in Iraq, including the invasion of Iraq with the 3rd Infantry Division on the front lines. After all I've seen and done, I have no explanation for what this thing was. Because of my background in military security clearance, I need to be kept out of any public report. So I simply want answers and will cooperate fully if we're ever in person. The thing that bothers me the most is this figure's lack of fear and the fear that I felt in return. I fear very little in life anymore. I just want to get to the bottom of this. So I still like it. No real interaction.
Right.
But the sense, again, of this thing, he's got the shotgun on it. This dude's ready to rock. And this thing, most of them, like we always talk about, if they see you carrying a gun, they scatter.
Yeah, they know like what it is. Know.
This one, maybe... Look, there's some people are a-holes. There's got to be some a-hole Bigfoot out there, too, right? That he's just like, point that gun at me again one time, pink monkey, and I'll pull your arms off.
And there's a lot of sightings in Oklahoma for whatever reason.
A ton.
It doesn't, in your mind, it doesn't look like Bigfoot country to me. But there's a lot of sightings. I guess I'm by Broken Bow.
Boomer, Bigfoot, yeah, Broken Bow, come on.
Yeah, that looks like Bigfoot territory. Yeah, I resent that.
Yeah, it's Broken Bow. Dude, they have them everywhere.
He needs to go to Area X. That's up in Oklahoma.
Yeah, yeah. What's funny about Broken Bow is like the last time we went, you can just kind of mention it to people, and people are like, oh, yeah, the people that live there. And they're like, oh, yeah, my sister saw something not 30 days ago.
When you drive through the town of Broken Bow, how many Bigfoot things do you see, right?
And that used to be it was just a few Bigfoot places, and now, of course, it's grown up. It's not even remotely close to what it was.
It's a good pizza shop up there, the Grateful Head.
The Grateful Head, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. They got live entertainment.
Yeah,
good pizza.
It's a pretty good spot.
Well, I'm glad you brought a Bigfoot because I've got one, too.
Lay on the Bigfoot.
Says, I'm a 71-year-old retired police officer. During my career, I was trained to observe people, details, and surroundings. And then rely on those observations as accurately as possible. My first encounter happened in October of 1991. A group of friends and I had leased a 4,800-acre ranch in Young County, Texas. You know where Young County is.
I know exactly where it is.
Right? I've hunted in Young County.
Mm-hmm. Many a time.
I was the only bow hunter in the group, which allowed me to start deer hunting a month earlier than the others.
I've been that guy many a time, too.
The night before the October 1st bow season opener, I was asleep in my tent when I was awakened around midnight by a loud screaming noise. I heard a series of three or four evenly spaced screams. It sounded exactly like a woman in distress. At the time, the nearest house was more than 10 miles away. After I calmed down, I tried to make sense of it and eventually wrote the screams off as a mountain lion. I mean, it just had to be. I got up at 3 in the morning and was in my stand well before daylight. When I climbed into my ladder stand, I found three rocks stacked exactly where I would sit. After the morning hunt, I left an apple beside the stacked rocks. I had five bow stands on that ranch, so I could hunt according to wind direction. Later, I found three stacked stones in all of them.
I thought you were going to say he had a 5-pound apple. I was like, whoa.
I thought he was going to say he had a 5-pound bow. I was like, what?
5-pound apples, huge.
He said, I've never heard of those screams again, and I've never had any further problems during the next 20 years I hunted that place. Now, the next major encounter happened in 2003. I was hunting on a ranch about 13 miles south of Seymour, Texas.
Heyo!
In late October. I'd gone into my ladder stand well before daylight again. The stand was set in timber, running along a fence line that bordered a huge mesquite tree flat. A cold front I'd been waiting on for a while arrived about half an hour before daylight. Then an intense thunderstorm broke out. Since the nearest shelter was about 3 miles away, I just decided to stay where I was. I had my rain gear on, and it was comfortable enough that I actually fell asleep. I do that all the time in the morning.
Dude, I have done the same thing in rain gear when it's raining, sitting in that stand. You better be glad you got the daddy come home strap on, because if not, you would end up falling out of that thing to your death, because I have 100% nodded off in the rain like
that. Have me some little Debbie Knacks in there. You know what I'm talking about.
Well, I'll tell you what I do know is there is a pile of sunflower seeds scattered around your tripod that looks like birds have been roosting there.
It says, I was sitting about 15 feet above the ground when a loud crash of thunder woke me up. It came right after a series of lightning bolts that lit up the sky as bright as day. I glanced to my right, standing no more than 5 feet from me. What now?
I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
I glanced to my right, and all I could think of, and I see my homie Nate.
Go back to the hotel reference. Is that what we're doing here?
Oh, my goodness. That's funny.
It says, I glanced to my right, standing no more than 5 feet from me and about 5 feet lower than my position was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. It was very tall, very muscular. It was a human-like creature covered in hair. It stood at least 10 feet tall and was covered in light brown hair with a little silver hair mixed in.
Nope.
It had a huge headset on massive, powerful shoulders. There appeared to be no neck. Sounds like you, Cam.
I have a huge head and no neck, and that's about all I got.
It had a very heavy brow ridge and a defined human-like nose. Its eyes were deep set, with dark rings beneath them. It had heavy, dark eyebrows. The whites of its eyes were coffee-colored or bloodshot. The irises were yellowish-green, and the pupils were extremely dilated. Its face was human-like and covered with a full beard, though it had little or no mustache. Its lips were darker than the skin of its face and appeared normal-sized in proportion to the rest of the face. The facial skin was medium brown. Its arms were longer than a human's arms. It had thick, muscular legs, and I estimate that it weighed at least 700 pounds. I have no idea whether it was male or female. When it exhaled, I could see its breath in the cold air. The temperature had just dropped into the mid-30s. The longer hair on its body was dripping with rainwater. I do not know how long it had been standing there watching me. The odd thing is that I felt no fear. I only felt a sense of wonder at being in the presence of this amazing creature. If it had wanted me, it could have easily taken my life with no trouble at all. After the next flash of lightning, I looked back in its direction, and it was gone. I never saw it again. Later, I left another apple on the seat of my ladder stand. The next time I returned to that stand, the apple was gone. One other detail stands out. As the sun rose that morning, I could see the tree I was sitting in was covered with monarch butterflies. As more light came in, I realized that every tree I could see for the next half mile down that fence line was also covered in them. They left in waves, tens of thousands at a time, until the last of them departed about 9:30 in the morning. It was a wonderful experience.
How did you see all the detail on the face in a lightning storm?
That quickly. Dude, I don't know.
They had to be close.
Yeah, he said it was like 5 feet away.
Dude, it was just there chilling. Maybe it was interested in you.
Maybe. But look, what we always talk about with Fae Folk and stuff, you left them a gift.
Mm-hmm.
You leave them a sample. You leave some tobacco. You leave them a little thing of liquor.
They don't snatch you out of the deer stand.
They're not going to mess with you.
Maybe he was in there hanging out like, hey, you going to leave any more of them 5-pound apples?
Yeah. You going to leave any more of those Little Debbie snacks? I hear you opening up every 10 minutes.
Dude, if I can hear them, you know the deer can. That's an encounter I wouldn't mind having.
Well, that's the thing with Bigfoot. Some people are terrified, and others, they've said, I didn't feel scared. I was just in awe.
Yeah.
That I felt lucky that I got to see it. I've heard so much about it.
And I could get behind that.
Yeah,
I could too. Of being like, I think I feel lucky enough to see this whole thing. Look, I got something here I need to share with you that took place in 91. I want you to listen to this story. In the summer of 1991, I was driving between Forest, Mississippi and Harper Valley on State Route 35.
Okay.
You can't help but think of that song anytime you hear it too, don't you?
Yeah.
It's playing in your head right now. I want to tell y'all all a story.
Mm-hmm.
It was between 9 p.m. and 10 p.m. when a wild-eyed creature crossed in front of my vehicle. I described it as a lichen droid. It was on all fours, but it stood somewhere between 7 and 8 foot tall. Now, at the time, I was driving a 1987 four-door Honda Accord. I'm 6'4", and I weighed about 295, so I had a good sense of scale when I saw it. How did you get into that Accord?
That's a good point.
That's a big fella. At the time, I was employed by the Mississippi Department of Wildlife, Fisheries, and Parks, Division of Parks and Recreation. I was stationed at Golden Memorial State Park in Leake in Scott County on Highway 492, where I worked as assistant park manager. After leaving that position, I relocated to Hardin County, Tennessee, and later lived in the Savannah and Counts, Tennessee area near Pickwick Lake. I saw the creature again in 1995 on Mississippi State Route 25 between Elk Landing and Goat Island Road. It came out from between a red brick house and the railroad tracks, then ran in front of my car and disappeared into a kudzu bank. The sighting happened in broad daylight. After another sighting occurred in the fall of 2006, I saw it run across Highway 128 in Hardin County, Tennessee, between Sand Hill Holiness Church and Stag Lane. It crossed in front of my 1992 Cadillac Seville, moving at a fast pace. The last sighting occurred in December of 2010 out on the Penwick Dam levee on State Route 128, just above the four-way stop sign with State Route 57 near the State Park Golf Course. David. So he's witnessed it several times.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's following him.
Maybe.
That's what it sounds like. He goes on to provide some clarification. Sure. Lawn Scent says, I am a former state certified law enforcement officer and academy trained in Tennessee and Mississippi. Without question, what I observed was a real creature. This creature is a real thing. After these sightings, I stopped driving at night and stopped going out into the woods. I live near 43,000-acre Pickwick Lake, surrounded by forested national and state wildlife refuges in Mississippi, Alabama, and Tennessee. I have no reason to lie or fabricate a story. In two of the sightings, I had eyewitnesses in the vehicle with me. The Mississippi Highway 25 sighting by the railroad overpass bridge in Tishomingo County, Mississippi, involved the same creature I later saw on the levee on State Route 128 in December of 2010. Apparently, these creatures travel through swampy or drainage ditch areas close to roadways or in forested areas with thick tree lines near pastures. So the dude's law enforcement, then transferred over into the Parks Department, trained observer, like we talked about,
right,
and familiar with all the wildlife and the whole thing, which is funny. You and I have talked about this. I remember I really can't say it's hearsay. It was some friends in the business, let's say, in the Bigfoot realm that is pretty, I don't want to use their names and any of that stuff, but y'all know them. We've spoken to them. I mean, y'all know all. They were at a convention. I remember this story where they had a game warden. Mm-hmm. And the game warden came up and they were asking questions about him. The game warden's like, we have no evidence of any of this, these creatures really existing. Right. You know, like all of this stuff. Thing's over. Game warden steps off the whole thing. It moves on. They're doing other stuff. A couple of our friends that are researchers went and spoke to the game warden and they stepped outside. And the game warden was like, those are the things that we have to say.
Right.
He goes, but the things that most of us all know is there's something out there we can't explain. We're not sure how it hides its tracks. And that was the very first time I heard where they said that they believed that they had some sort of flap or a way that they could do their toes as not to dig in when they're standing, almost like a covering of some way where they don't leave tracks in certain areas as much as they do in others. But yeah, that they were like, there's enough sightings of people that we know now and our people have seen things that we still, but we can't openly say, yeah, there's something.
Do you think that's
there.
A reason why in the national parks they don't keep a record of missing people and stuff? They just don't want to open up a whole can of worms.
It's almost like if you just look the other way, neglect it and just move on, that it's, yeah, I guess they don't want, if they give credence to it, then it's going to explode and they're going to be like, oh, it's, you know, and you know the way everything goes. But I'm like.
Well, like you've talked about numerous times, it's like in the timber industry, they don't want it to be let known that it's a real thing because then they're going to have to cut down. You can't cut down trees down here no more. The woods are going to be overrun with people trying to find the thing. Yeah. It's better if we just keep it a mystery.
It could be a problem. Yeah. Especially for certain industries, it could be a real problem. And then you're talking about also, you got to think about not just monetarily that way, but if you have national parks, well, then you're going to have to close off sections of the national parks where you're like, y'all can't go in there. We know. Like you said, if you're keeping up with missing people, you're like, they all go missing in these areas. It's probably best we don't visit those areas anymore.
Man, I'm excited about the new one that just opened.
It's going to be a good time.
And then I saw that they're going to be opening up another one down by Austin.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be like 4 or 5 years out before it's done.
But we still need to go float the Devil's River.
I want to.
We need to do that.
I want to go to Defender Outdoors.
Yeah, we can do that.
You know they're moving.
No.
They'll be moved. They've already purchased 400 and something acres down between Joshua and Crowley.
Oh.
And the Fort Worth Trap and Skeet Club, that's right across the street from, they're moving with them. So they're both going to be one location.
That will be an amazing place to go bust clays.
And it's going to be one of the best facilities in America, and they're going to host like the world championships.
Oh, yeah. It's so much fun. Yeah, we'll have to go check that out. Speaking of going and checking it out, folks, let's take a quick break. When we get back, I've got some unsettling dog man stories that I love. And Kyle's got what?
I've got a couple Glimmer Man stories. I've got some alien abductions.
Glimmer Man.
Man and the alien abduction might be the same thing. Might be the same category.
Glimmer Man. That's new to me. Anyway, let's take a quick one, folks. When we get back, we're going to listen to some Glimmer Man stories. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Today's episode is brought to you by the fine folks over at IQ Bar.
Yes!
Our exclusive snack, hydration, and coffee sponsor. Listen, when you're 3 hours deep into a rabbit hole about underground reptilian civilizations and someone texts you a blurry photo of a satyr standing outside a Dollar General, you need serious fuel for both your brain and body, and that's exactly where IQ Bar comes in. Their protein bars, IQ Mix hydration packets, and IQ Joe mushroom coffees are low sugar, ridiculously good brain fuel designed to keep you sharp, hydrated, and at least somewhat functional while questioning everything. If you're new to them, the Ultimate Sampler Pack is the perfect way to dive in. You get 9 IQ bars, you get 8 IQ Mix hydration sticks, and you get 4 IQ Joe coffee sticks. Basically, a full survival kit for modern weirdos and amateur monster hunters. A lot of you already know that one of my many nicknames is Big Fizzy, mostly because I drink enough sparkling water to float a small submarine.
Facts.
But these IQ hydration packets have officially taken over. Zero sugar, loaded with electrolytes, they boost clarity and mood, and they actually make plain water taste good. not like sadness. The flavors are fantastic too. Mint chocolate chip protein bars, blueberry pomegranate hydration mixes, and vanilla spice mushroom coffee. Plus, all kinds of wild seasonal drops that show up like mysterious snack-based UFOs. With over 20,000 five-star reviews, clearly we're not the only ones powering our weird lives with this stuff. IQ Bar has honestly become the best part of my daily routine, where when I start the day, and I know Cam does the same thing, when I'm kicking off in the morning with some IQ Joe, whether it's that or grabbing an IQ Bar on the way to the studio or mixing up an IQ mix after gardening while Cam's out in the back foraging medieval weapons under a blood moon, it just works. So if you want better snacks, better hydration, better coffee, and enough mental clarity to actually survive this episode, go check out IQ Bar.
Folks, right now, IQ Bar is offering our listeners 20% off all their products. All products plus free shipping.
Yep.
Just text EXPANDED to 64,000.
That's easy.
Super easy. Just text EXPANDED to 64,000. That's EXPANDED to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. You can see terms for details. Fuel your brain, fuel your body, and start your day the smarter way with IQ Bar.
Sir, yes, sir.
Do you want to kick this off?
Yeah, sure, I'll kick it off.
Or do you want me to?
No, I've got it.
All right. I'm handing it off. Let's see what you got. Scare me.
Okay, listen to this. I grew up in Western New York near Rochester.
That's scary enough. That's it. You got me. I'm scared enough.
Near Rochester, right by our friend. Our friend Richard Dolan lives in Rochester, I believe.
The D-Man.
It's not too far from the Canadian border. My father built what I can only describe as a mini mansion that backed up to a large wooded area. We called it the Forever Wild Woods because it was connected in our minds to New York's protected wilderness lands. Once the house was built, those woods became a huge playground for me and my closest friend, DJ. This was in the early 1990s, and we loved being outside. One day, while exploring, we found an amazing section of woods about a 50-minute walk from the house. It opened into a beautiful swamp full of flowers, water, and animal life. As we approached it, I remember noticing snapped trees all around us. There was also straight branches jammed into the ground, almost like spikes. The solid ground extended into the swamp like a narrow peninsula. The trees on both sides were almost like formed walls, funneling us out towards the water. When we reached the edge, we saw snapping turtles quickly submerge. Since we were just kids, we started skipping rocks and throwing larger stones into the water to make big splashes. We were only playing around. Then out of nowhere, both DJ and I felt a sudden wave of fear. It was almost like a sixth sense, something primal. The hair on our bodies stood up, and we both began looking around, trying to figure out what we had just triggered and like what gave us that feeling. DJ pointed to a tree across the water. I can only describe what I saw as the top half of the tree bending violently back and forth. It was not moving as if it were being pushed by the wind. It looked as though something powerful was bending it to the point that it might snap. It went left, then right, then back left again. The movement became faster and faster. The tree, of course, was creaking loudly, but the bottom of the trunk barely moved. Then, without warning, there was a deep, rumbling growl. It was so loud and powerful that it shook us inside. I've been around loud things before, and I later learned to shoot an 8-gauge black powder shotgun, but nothing compared to the force of that sound. It felt like my soul had been pushed out through my back and then snapped back into me like a giant invisible rubber band. In the dead silence that followed, DJ and I ran for our lives. We ran the whole way home, through the bushes and branches. Our exposed skin was getting scratched and torn up, but neither one of us stopped. I remember thinking I could hear something pursuing us from all around, but neither of us said a word about it while we were running. When we got home, we tried to tell my parents what had happened, but they wouldn't listen. After that, we decided to stay inside for the rest of the day. As usual, DJ was spending the night. We decided to sleep in a large room in that house that we called for support. It was about 25 by 20 feet, with double-hung windows on two exterior walls, a sliding glass door that led out to a three-story deck, and a French door leading into the formal living room. My father had worked hard in life. He went from being a garbage man to owning a business, and that house reflected that. DJ was sleeping on the couch. I was lying on the floor in front of a television with my Nintendo. It was summer, so all the double-hung windows were open wide. I was stretched out on the floor with my arms behind my head. My neck was resting on a couple of pillows, and my fingers were interlaced behind my head. My hands were folded up behind me, with my elbows flared out. DJ was already asleep and snoring. I was half asleep, watching something on the TV. As God is my witness, out of nowhere, I felt a massive hand engulf both of my hands and part of my wrists. Then it pulled me towards the windows. I slid about 2 or 3 feet across the floor and completely lost it. I screamed in terror. Whatever had grabbed me released me, and within a minute, my father came running into the room. DJ was silent. He was just staring at me. I told my father what had happened. He checked every window and said all the screens were slid down and in place. He told me it was just a dream and that I needed to man up and also needed to shut up. So, that's what I did. I shut up. I just prayed he would leave the room. After he left, I looked at DJ and asked him if he had seen it. He just stared at me. It wouldn't say anything. A short time later, he called his parents and had them pick him up in the middle of the night. Well, I went upstairs and tried to sleep in my own room. The next day, I called DJ's house to see if he wanted to come over. His mother said that he didn't feel well and told me not to call again until I heard from him. That confused my 12-year-old mind. We were best friends, but after that night, we never really got together again. I would see him occasionally, but he was always cold toward me. Eventually, near the end of that summer, I ran into him on a canal path, one of our old fishing spots. His mother was not there to act as a buffer, so I finally questioned him about what happened that night. He confessed and said that he awakened and seen something. Something grabbed me. He did not call it a predator, but that's the closest description he gave. He said it was a massive, clear, distorted, shimmering thing. He saw it reach in and pull me. At the time, I had no idea that other people had reported seeing similar cloaked or invisible beings. I now refer to what grabbed me as a predator. Did it lift the screen? Did it reach through? And then slide it back down that quickly? Did it somehow pass through the fiberglass mesh? I don't know. I checked the area the next morning. I found no tracks. DJ, he said he thought it was a ghost. I did not put it all together till much later, as an adult. I believe something followed us home after we trespassed on its territory. It could have hurt us easily at any time, but it did not. Part of me also thinks it had a sick sense of humor and enjoyed terrifying us. I never went deep into those woods again. Yeah, right?
There it is. Like he feels like it was doing it on purpose.
Yep.
It's getting something from it.
And that's the thing. He calls it the predator because, of course, the movie.
Yeah.
But people are. Is it a cloaked being? Is it a ghost, in fact? Because DJ thought it was a ghost. But I've heard other people say that. I thought it was a spirit. And other people were like, no, man, it felt like something demonic.
Was there, physically there.
And then it seems like it enjoys toying with people. So then you're like, well, is it Faye?
Well, then he said he saw limbs moving and all that stuff, too. You're like, not many ghosts are shaking tree limbs.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then I'm going to take over real quick for another dog man encounter. That's right, folks. Get ready for a little werewolf action. Says, I grew up in the small foothills of eastern Kentucky, in a place called Bailey's Creek in Harlan County. It is this kind of area where folklore, haunt stories, and tales of mountain monsters run rampant. Everyone has a cousin or uncle who claims they saw Bigfoot while hunting, or an aunt who swears she saw a ghost in the old high school one time. Because of that, it can be hard to tell what's true and what's fiction. Most of what I have personally seen or heard while out in the mountains, I usually attribute to local wildlife. Have I ever seen anything that my logical mind could not explain? Not yet, but I'm also not arrogant enough to think that these things do not exist. I once heard someone say that 90% of the stories are fiction, but the other 10% is what keeps you coming back. By that logic, we have to assume that some percentage of the stories are true, and that some people really did witness something amazing and terrifying. In my small town, Dog Man is known as the culprit behind many unfortunate happenings. I've heard stories of it killing chickens, trying to bust down doors, attacking hikers, or just being a nuisance on someone's farm or property. Now, I've also heard stories of it stalking people who live deep in the woods, coming up to stare into their windows at night, and even protecting them from strangers who wandered onto their land. Most of the people who tell these stories like to tell what we call booger stories. They enjoy having a grand tale to tell, whether for attention or simply for the pleasure of telling it. Now, I'm not sure which, but a few of these people are trustworthy, and they usually tell their story only if asked. My grandfather was one of these people. Now, yeah, I know that sounds biased because he was my grandfather, but I have six uncles and an aunt who could practically make a living from the lies they tell about local cryptids, and I am more than happy to call them liars. My grandfather, though, was a very logical man. He was skeptical about cryptids, spirits, ghosts, and anything supernatural. He always looked for the logical explanation, and he usually upset the storyteller by questioning every detail. Now, that's why I tend to believe him. He never tried to lie to me or to the other grandkids. If anything, he was the voice of reason when we ran to who we ran to when we were scared. So once, when I was younger, I asked him if he had ever seen anything strange before, whether it was a ghost or a monster. And I'd been hearing stories from my uncles all day about Bigfoots and haunts and haunts and all other things. And I wanted to know what he thought. So he sat there for a minute, without even acknowledging my question. I was about to ask again, thinking maybe he hadn't heard me, when he finally spoke up. He told me that when he and my grandmother first bought our family homestead, that they heard fantastic stories about monsters roaming that part of the mountains and how evil they were. My grandmother was a little frightened by those stories, but my grandfather said he just shook his head and went on. He figured people were seeing or hearing black bear or maybe bobcats, and he wasn't too worried about it. About 2 months after they moved in, he did see a mother bear and her cubs making their way up the mountain behind the house. So when he heard something pounding on his front door one night, scratching at it and trying to get in, he didn't immediately think of monsters. He told me he grabbed his shotgun before going to the door. He tried looking out the front window to catch a glimpse of whatever or whoever was out there. All he could see was a large black shadow being cast across the porch. Being the fearless soul that he was, he unlocked the door, swung it open, expecting to see a bear or maybe even a person standing there. It was neither. What he saw that night still had him shaken when he told me the story some 50 years later. He said that as the door opened, he saw an extremely large humanoid standing there. It was about 6.5 feet tall, slightly hunched over under the covered porch. Its arms were long and its hands reaching well past its bent knees. The knees bent in the opposite direction of a human's knees. He said it was covered in thick, dense black hair, and it had a smell like the mixture of a wet dog and raw sewage. But the face, or rather the head, was what stopped him cold. He said it looked like a German shepherd's head had been placed on a large, hairy, human-shaped body. And as he looked at it, this thing cocked its head sideways and looked back down at him. Its eyes showed fear and confusion. He told me he raised his gun, and before his finger could even pull the trigger, the creature took off. He still managed to fire a warning shot, hitting it in the right calf muscle. He said the howl that came out of it after he shot it scared him more than anything in his life ever had. He ran back inside and bolted the door closed. He stood there listening as its cries and howls faded away deeper and deeper into the mountains until he could hear it no more. Only then did he move away from the door and go back to the bed. Now, he swore to me on all things that he had held dear that the creature still showed up sometimes after that, dragging its wounded leg a across his porch as if as it came up to the door, but it never bothered anything again. He said it would come up to the door, sniff around, growl softly, and then move off again. He told me that there are many things in the woods that can hurt you, whether beast or plant, and many more things that can scare you. But the thing he saw that night was the scariest of them all. He told me I had best never go looking for it, because if I came across it, I would regret it badly. My grandfather's been gone now for about 15 years, and I still believe every word he told me that day. Does that prove the existence of such a creature? Maybe not. The words of an old war veteran will not be enough to change some people's minds, but to me, it's the realest story I've ever heard about the creature. And I hope someday someone can get an actual documented proof, if only to prove what my grandfather went through and what he saw that night. So living out there, never believed in any of the hogwash, right? Waiting for it to come on the porch, shot it in the leg, and it still comes back, or it used to.
You see, that's what it's like. These old timers know about it.
Yeah, I've thought a lot about it, about all the stories we've heard from old men seeing all kinds of creatures. You think about living up in the mountains, right? Up in any of those mountains, all up in that area, or out in the West, or any of that stuff. You're out there by yourself. You're working cattle. You're working the farm. You're doing whatever. But they were always close to nature. They're always out there in it. So it does make you wonder. They've been around long enough that they not only learned about them, their families knew about them prior to them. So they learned from their dad or their mom and their mom's mom, their dad's dad, as they backed down. These things have been there like we've talked about. It always goes back to the story like I told you with Daryl.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's always like these old locals are like, know. Don't go back in those hollers when you hear that sound.
Yeah, they make up stories to keep
you out.
They
don't mess with you if you don't mess with them. So yep. I'm just telling you that.
Don't go out there.
Right.
Just don't go. Yeah.
I like the idea of that because it's.
I love it.
Is it pumpkin head or is it raw head Rex? What's the one where it's like that old guy's living in the woods and he knows about the pumpkin head?
I think it's pumpkin head because in raw head Rex where they like bring him back and he goes around and he attacks the
one
priest.
Of them's like is an old man living in the I picture it somewhere in Appalachia mountains and a bunch of drunk teenagers or partiers run over and kill his kid. Remember, and he like goes out in the woods.
That's pumpkin head.
And
I think.
He summons this demon because he knows it's there.
I think that's pumpkin
I think it's pumpkin head. Classic. Yeah,
classic. Crazy classic.
Well, with all the UAP stories that are coming out now, yeah. Everybody's just acknowledging, oh, yeah, aliens exist. I mean, we've always wondered about that our whole lives.
Now everybody's just kind of openly like, yeah, they're there. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, and then there's the new movie Disclosure Day coming up.
Yeah.
I started looking into some more UFO stuff.
Great. So you've not been sleeping much lately is what you're telling
me. No, you know, in fact, I was wanting to go out to Area 53 soon and do some hunting. But then after that story, I'm like, I don't know if I want to stay out there by myself at night. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I know it's an inside joke, but
yeah,
a place like that we like to hunt.
They had something happen.
Yeah.
That nobody was expecting. And it's not like a cryptid. It's like something from the sky was, doing some crazy stuff.
Well. And then my only thing that makes me feel better is like the guy to remember the people that were hunting are inexperienced hunters. So maybe it was something explainable.
If that's what makes you sleep better at night, go ahead and keep telling yourself that.
Yeah, I was going to go out
deep
there.
Deep down inside, you know the truth.
Anyways, this occurred in 2010. I had gone to Bangor, Maine to visit my brother. Around 2 a.m., I left his house and started walking to the home of a longtime friend who also lived in the same city. It was only about a 10-minute walk. The next thing I remember, my eyes were closed, and I could hear a calm, relaxing, almost hypnotic female voice speaking to me. It said, Kevin, it's okay. We're here to help. It's okay. We're not going to harm you. It's okay. We're going to make you feel better. Then my eyes opened. At first, there was a blinding light, but after a few moments, it faded, and I could see the room around me. There were two gray aliens present. They were very tall. The room itself appeared to have two different wall colors. The upper part of the wall was purple, and the lower part of the wall was blue. I asked them if they were going to harm me and what they were going to do to me. They replied that they would help me and fix me. I was not moving my mouth when I spoke to them. It was as if all communication was happening without normal speech. The next thing I remember, one gray was on each side of me. They pressed me against a cold metal object, and it seemed to move with them. They took me into a hallway to the left of a white room. The hallway was dark, cloudy, and misty, as if it were filled with fog. It must have been about 40 to 50 feet long. Before I reached the next room, I could see at least 7 or 8 tall grays standing in a huddled circle formation in the room to my right. There was also an exit leading into another room next to them. The walls in that room had deep indentations that looked almost like V-shaped grooves. When they brought me into this room, I noticed a chemical-like smell. It reminded me of a mixture of bleach and ammonia. They took me to the center of the room. I remember one of the beings was so tall that he had to bend down slightly to look me in the eyes. At that point, I was not as frightened as I should have been. It was also difficult for me to clearly see their faces at times. I was still standing against the object they had placed on me while I was in the white room. One of them placed a hand on my nose, and another inserted a small black tube into my nose. The tube, it made a noise. The gray beings had long fingers. They were very tall and had small mouths that moved up and down like a fish's mouth, though no sound seemed to come from them. After they used the tube, I remember screaming. All the while, I could still hear the calm female voice saying, "It's going to be okay. We're here to help." The voice was soft and soothing, as if they were trying to keep me relaxed, but by then I was scared. The next thing I remember, I was lying down. They moved me towards the left side of the room. I became hostile, and I remember cocking my left leg back with a kicking motion to one of the grays near my lower left side. He slammed against the wall when I nailed him with it, and he fell down. The other grays quickly backed away.
Throwing sidekicks for Jesus in space, baby.
That's right. He hit him with one of those wheel kicks. From that point, the next thing I remember is being back on the other side of the road. See, after you sanchise somebody,
exactly,
they drop you off. They're like, this one, we're done with this one.
When you lightly head kick a gray, it'll finally go, we got to take this one back.
For those that don't know who Sanchai is, he's an amazing kickboxer. Just go on YouTube, right, Cam?
Yeah,
tell him the channel.
Pull it up. Yeah. You just go to Thai Fight Official. You'll see him. Just punch it up. It's not spelled the way it is. He's a Thai beast, man. He's got like almost 500 fights. I think he's won close to 400 of them. Maybe more. I think he's only got 51 losses and like 370 wins.
Man.
He's like 42.
I love Thai fighting.
He's like 5'10", like 5'9". I'm like Sanchai will put you to sleep.
I just want to go there and play the flute.
And you said you wanted to drink cobra blood too, is what you told me, and gamble on Thai fights.
Yeah.
That's what he wants. Go ahead with your story.
Doesn't sound fun? Anyway.
I didn't say that.
All right, back to the story, folks. From that point, after I did my Sanchai wheel kick on the gray, the next thing I remember is being back on the side of the road. I realized that something had happened, but I was shaken and still confused. I was groggy. I was also very tired, and I had a strange, lost feeling. A police officer, drove by slowly and asked me if I needed any help. He looked at me for several seconds. He didn't say hi or anything. He just looked at me like I was like, what are you doing out here?
Then I wheel kicked him.
No. I later realized that I had lost 3 to 4 hours of time. It was nearly 6 a.m. when I finally reached my friend's house. I know there are other encounters, but this one sticks out in my mind the most. Okay. So the person's just walking to their buddy's house.
And gets abducted.
But...
fought back.
Ended his abduction by kicking him. So remember that, folks. That might be a hot tip.
Look, if it wasn't for mental telepathy and all that stuff, you could beat a gray down.
Oh, yeah.
The target you're throwing punches at is extremely large. Right?
Like their big head?
Yeah. Could you imagine landing like a leg kick on them? You'd just shatter their hip.
Well, I'd have to because they said it was 7 foot tall. I can't kick higher than 3 feet.
I have to kick them in the knee. Just shoot a double on them. But they seem frail.
Dude, you gotta fight back. And so, when I read this account, I haven't done this in a long time, been looking into things like that. It started making me think, are alien abductions even a thing anymore? Because when I was a kid, that was like a hotbed for alien abductions. What was it, like the 70s and the 80s, man? That's when you had all the Bud Hopkins and, who the other, some of the John Mack.
That's when Whitley Strieber movies
David
messed
Jacobs.
You up.
Yeah, Whitley Strieber. All those, it was like, there was a short window, and I think it was like a 20-year period. where alien abduction, these guys are writing these books. They were becoming New York Times bestsellers. There were people doing Geraldo Rivera interviews. You were doing, showing people that were, you know, there was panelists on these TV shows talking about how they were alien abductions.
Yeah.
And it was popular at the time. And then it kind of just died off. And like nowadays, like I said, I haven't looked into it in a while, but it doesn't appear like there's near as many alien abductions. Right. So has the phenomenon stopped, or it's just not popular anymore? Like other things that, you know,
that's a good question.
There was at one point things were popular, like waterbeds that aren't anymore. Glamour shots, you know, those NFTs.
Aren't popular. Waterbeds aren't popular anymore.
No, man, I don't even know if you can buy one anywhere.
Probably
new.
Not.
Yeah,
probably.
Remember back in the day, that was a thing.
You don't want to buy a used waterbed. that's like buying chewing gum.
Even the way alien abductions were done have changed. What I mean is, and you'll know what I'm talking about, in the 50s, they weren't even called abductees. They were called contactees.
Yeah.
And you were, it was a nice experience. You were a contactee. You were special. You were chosen by the Zekeli Reticuli people to give the word that, listen, you're messing the planet up. Y'all got to knock it off with these nukes. You're going to destroy the world. And then over time that changed.
They went to probing.
Then it became hostile. Like the Betty and Barney Hill. That was like 1961 New Hampshire.
Was it different aliens?
Maybe. And then it was like terrifying.
Yeah.
And then the inductions seemed horrible. Then they started chipping people so they could follow you.
Yeah.
They could follow your lineage. They would impregnate women, then steal the fetus.
And now they have like, they know your DNA, so they'll come back and follow your family.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So
it's elevated to a really bad place. It started out as friendly fun. Just hanging out, talking to your buddies. Now they're kidnapping folks, taking them to space and pumping them full of space drugs and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, even the different races of aliens. They've even acknowledged on the news that there's multiple races. There's insectoids. You got mantis
beings. The Nordics.
Now, listen, if you're going to get abducted, the Nordic whites, that's probably not too bad. I mean,
they seem to be pretty cool.
Hot Swedish girls?
But I don't want to be abducted by, like, space bugs.
No, right. I want the hot blonde, blue-eyed Swedish girls.
Like 8-foot tallers, supermodels.
It's like the lead singers of Ace of Base.
That's what I'm screaming.
Showed up at your house. You're not going to complain.
Yeah, you're like, hey, what's up?
But if it's a praying mantis that's 6-foot tall, I'm terrified.
Now we have a problem.
A 2-inch one of those can kill hummingbirds.
Yeah, bro, I don't need a 7-8-foot tall praying mantis picking me up on the side of the road in the dark. It's when you got to carry around Raid. It's not bear spray. It's Raid.
So do you think that the alien abduction phenomenon has slowed down, or is it just not sensationalized anymore?
I just don't think it's sensationalized as much anymore. I think it's become...
But you remember as a kid, it was just like the Satanic Panic. Like, you could turn on a daytime television show, Phil Donahue or something.
They would be interviewing him.
Ricky Lake, they'd be... Hey, listen, this person's been a lifelong person that's getting abducted.
And even since back I was then, a child. Well, and I almost feel like it's better now, is like it's acknowledged. It's like people are finally being like, yeah, y'all understand. I was really taken. It wasn't something that was like a mental break. It was like, dude, now we know they're real. Like, they really took me.
Well, yeah, now that they're acknowledging that they're really here and they're in the ocean.
So it's got to be helpful for those that are struggling that we're dealing with it. Because, I mean, we know a couple of people personally that have had some very weird abduction
stuff. They don't want to go under hypnosis. They don't want to remember. And I'm with them. I'd be like, 100%. I don't want to know.
I don't want to know any of that. No. No, it's better. Just ignorance is bliss. Because I'm afraid if I did, it's like you wouldn't want to leave the house. And then it's like, well, then it's not going to do you any good. They'll just come get you in your bed. Like, there's no hiding from them. And like you said a long time ago, how come they're always batting 100? They've never flubbed up an abduction.
You haven't. If they have, I haven't heard of it.
They have some way to recover. Like the whole thing.
It's like they can freeze time.
Yeah.
Do what they need to do and then unpause time. And maybe they can't.
Well, I don't think time matters.
Right. Well, right. Then you start
the way they work. Yeah. Now you're starting to talk quantum levels of stuff to where you're like, I don't even think they pay attention to time. I think they just come and go like wormhole and however they want.
Right. And then you get in the weeds and then it's like, what is time? Is time even a thing?
Yeah. Then it starts getting wonky.
What is gravity?
You know? Just
it's
theory.
Something. I know it works, but like works how? I don't know.
I don't know.
You can show me a bunch of calculus. Doesn't make any sense to me. There's a lot of things that don't make sense to me.
There's a lot. Like, I can't tell you how the stuff we're doing works. It's just electrical. I have no idea. I got one right quick I want to give before closing. I have to. Another one. I have a wolf-like predator that I need to tell you about.
Okay, sure.
It says it was the winter of 1997.
Hmm.
Or at least that's how I remember it. I was living in Ketchikan, Alaska, and serving in the National Guard as an 11B infantryman. And I loved it. At the time, a joint task force made up of different military branches had started work on a road project on nearby Aneta Island. The road was connected to a long-standing agreement involving the Metlakatla Indian community. It was a major project, and I believe it was eventually finished around 2007. The Marines had spent the first summer building the headquarters area, so by the time they were done, the camp consisted mostly of plywood huts and the frame of a mess hall. When summer ended, those huts were little more than sheds. There was no electricity and no running water. Then five other members of my unit and I were called to active duty. Our job was to live on the island through the winter and protect the camp. We'd been told that the local youth sometimes traveled from island to island vandalizing empty logging camps and similar sites. For budget reasons, the assignment was classified as a training mission. At first, it sounded like it might be a good time. 6 months in the winter on a remote island living in a plywood hut? What could go wrong? Things were rocky from the start. Usually, there were only four or five of us on the island at any given time, with a weekend rotation every 2 or 3 weeks for one or two men. It took a couple of months before we had a proper generator or propane for cooking, so for quite a while, we survived on MREs, three meals a day. Oh. The worst part was the outhouse. There was only one in the entire camp, and it was several hundred yards away from where we slept. To make matters worse, the ground had been declared sacred, so we were not allowed to relieve ourselves anywhere else. If you needed to take a leak, or worse, you had to march all the way down to that outhouse in the middle of an Alaskan winter. For the most part, though, I was enjoying it. We bonded, told jokes, played push-up poker, and generally had a good time roughing it. Then the heart of winter arrived, and with it came snow. Lots of snow. By then, we had these odd heaters that ran on diesel, so the huts were fairly cozy. The one place that was not heated was the outhouse. Not only was it freezing, but it was also filling up. The boat used to bring the portable toilet truck had been blocked by ice. So by the third month of our stay, the contents of the outhouse were dangerously close to overflowing. It was disgusting. It was freezing, and it became my nightmare. Give me a silt trench over an outhouse any day of the week. Even now, thinking about this, that massive frozen mound makes me cringe. I can still picture the steam rising from the hole and drifting out through the vents after each visit. But the outhouse, as bad as it was, is not the frightening part of this story. One night, four of us were lying on our cots getting ready for bed. A few of us were listening to a book on tape that Doc had brought with him. I think it was Carl Sagan's Contact. For entertainment, it was either that or Art Bell's Coast to Coast AM, which was about the only English language radio program that we could pick up. Now, if you know Art Bell, then you know the show covered aliens, Bigfoot, and all kinds of paranormal subjects. Well, that night, we heard noises outside. That may not sound scary, but out there, we rarely heard anything at all. At night or even during the day, there was not much activity in the middle of winter in the middle of nowhere. At first, we thought it might be local kids coming to mess around, tag the place or set something on fire. That seemed logical. Before we arrived on the island, we'd been shown nearby logging camps that had been badly vandalized, and we were warned that the same thing could happen to our camp if we didn't protect it. If it had been vandals, we would have been ready for them, or at least we wanted to be. The truth was, because this was classified as a training exercise, we had rifles, but no ammunition. We had M16s, but nothing to put in them. So we were no longer lying on our cots. We were getting dressed and discussing who should investigate the noise with an unloaded rifle. Then the sounds came right up to our door. Whatever was outside did not sound human. We could hear it breathing. It was loud, heavy breathing, huffing and snorting. Our PFC had been picked to lead the charge, but he flatly refused. None of us blamed him. Nobody wanted this to turn into some Alaskan version of Southern Comfort meets Predator. So we sat there in silence for about 10 minutes while the huffing and snorting continued outside. Eventually, the sounds faded away. A few minutes later, we worked up the nerve to open the door. Immediately, we saw tracks in the snow. They were the largest wolf prints I had ever seen. I swear they were the size of pie plates. Whatever was attached to those paws had been the size of a small horse, or at least as big as a dining room table. That changed everything. Remember that outhouse several hundred yards away? Before this happened, if you woke up in the middle of the night and needed to relieve yourself, you'd make the hike. After seeing those tracks, nobody was doing that anymore. Instead, we created a massive patch of yellow snow right next to the hut door. It became customary to open the door, point to the side, and melt some snow. There was no way on God's green earth any of us were going to walk all that way to that isolated outhouse with those things out in the dark. Our NCOIC returned for a weekend from a weekend in Ketchikan with his diving light. It was the brightest flashlight I'd ever seen. That thing turned night into day. So one night, we were joking around, smoking, and we started teasing the PFC because he had to use the outhouse for more than just a quick leak. It was not like he could just hang himself out the door. That was not something we wanted to find when spring came, and generals or dignitaries did come through the camp. So the PFC began gathering the courage to make the walk. He got fully dressed for the freezing cold and opened the door. As he was about to step outside, the sergeant switched on the diving light and aimed it down towards the outhouse. He was actually trying to help by lighting the way. As the beam poured down the hill, we could see the outhouse. And standing next to it was a wolf. Its eyes lit up like two little moons. It was staring up at us, and it didn't move. Now, even though this thing was approximately 300 foot away, the PFC immediately backed deeper into the hut. The sergeant kept the diving light fixed on that unholy-sized wolf until the light started to overheat. The wolf saw us. It knew there was more than one of us, yet it did not move an inch. It just stood there, staring at us while we stared back at it. When the sergeant finally turned off the diving light, the wolf was still standing there, still watching us. We were the ones who had to break eye contact and close the door. That wolf knew it was in charge. We knew it too. And to this day, books on tape give me the creeps, James. So it was waiting for them out there after all.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah. Ambush.
Ambushing them, trying to go to the potty. That's a pretty bad way to ambush your buddies when you're just trying to use the bathroom, man. I'm like, come on.
And the outhouse is the worst part of every camp, I would imagine.
Always. It's always the worst part of the camp. Always.
Let's take a break. When we get back from the break, we're going to wrap this show up. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. With Expanded Perspectives. While I was looking at UFO stories, I did find another abduction. But again, that came from the 90s. But this is in Japan. I don't know if you've ever heard any alien abduction stories from Japan.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, I don't know if you've ever heard of Japan. I've actually heard of Japan.
Okay. I'd like to go to Japan. We know somebody who lives there. Actually, my friend Mark and Candy, too.
So, yeah. And Dakota wants us over whenever. He's like, y'all can just come stay with us.
I'd love to go there. Because everything seems civilized. Well, everything's in order. They have manners.
And also, they have the coolest, like, food machines. Like, dude, it just looks neat.
I heard their 7-Elevens are better.
Well, that's, look, Dakota's told me he loves getting food out of the 7-Elevens.
I've heard that.
And I want to go to Tokyo, but then I also want to go out into the, I want to go see the old temples. I want to go
I want to taste the eggs that it's taken a guy 36 years to master.
That would, yeah, that's just, they better be some good eggs.
I would like to see the old temples and castles.
I've got to go see them because they're put together with no nails.
Right, the woodworking.
No, there's no metal in them. It's all joinery.
I get lost watching videos on YouTube about that stuff.
Japanese joinery?
Yeah.
It's because you're old, dude. There's not a 25-year-old young man out there right now, even 30, worried about Japanese joinery.
I'm not worried about it, by saying.
No, you just you like watching it.
I like watching Kyle Royler make those knives.
Yep.
I like watching craftsmen, basically.
Craftsmen. That's my favorite thing to watch. Craftsmen and disc golf.
All right. Well, let's check this out. This is a short one. It says, while I was in the Marine Corps, stationed in Okinawa, Japan in 1995, I was assigned to a shooting range near Camp Schwab to guard ammunition.
Isn't that where Mr. Miyagi's from?
Camp Schwab? Oh, Okinawa. Yeah,
that's where Karate Kid 2 takes place,
right? Oh, yeah.
That looked awesome back in the day, too.
Yeah, some of the longest living people are Okinawans.
Heck yeah.
It's because I think they mostly eat fish.
Yeah.
This happened sometime in August. It was about 9:05 p.m. I just completed a radio check with range control to confirm everything was okay. The bugs were attacking me, so I pulled on my poncho up over my entire body to get away from them. The next thing I knew, my poncho was being pulled off of me. When I looked up, I saw what could only be described as the typical gray alien standing over me. The difference was that its skin was more of an almond color. It was a very bright night because of the full moon, so I could see it clearly enough. There appeared to be four others standing behind it. What shocked me even more was that it tried to talk to me. The sound was strange and muffled, almost like the adult characters in the Peanuts cartoons. You know, with the wah-wah-wah kind of sound. I remembered being completely unhinged. I jumped up and started screaming when it spoke to me. Then it disappeared along with the others. The other Marine who was guarding ammunition with me woke up when he heard me screaming. He asked me, "What's wrong?" I told him what had just happened, and he looked at me like I was crazy. That was when I noticed the time. It was 10:45 p.m. I couldn't understand it. I know that I didn't fall asleep because it was my turn on radio watch. I also know that I didn't dream this, but I cannot account for the missing time. I did not want to radio in what had happened because I was afraid I would be sent for psych evaluations. At the same time, I knew that an intruder near an ammunition dump was serious and should have been reported. The other Marine told me that he had been asleep the entire time and did not see or hear anything until I started screaming and jumping around. I kept quiet about that incident for a few days, but it kept bothering me. Finally, about a week later, I told a couple of my friends. A good friend of mine who had been out there one day before me said that she saw almost the same thing. In her case, she said it chased one of them into the ammo tent, and when it was just about to shoot it, the being disappeared. She said that she also had been afraid to say anything because she thought people would think she was crazy. I never saw any bright lights or an alien spacecraft, but I only saw the beings. I know that's strange, but that's all I know, Patrick.
That's enough to just.
Well, that's all you need to know.
That's really
right?
All you need to know. Yeah.
It's got to be at least comforting to know that multiple people saw the same thing. You're not the only one.
Look at the nerve on that thing to walk up and grab your rain jacket.
Yeah, right.
You're like, bro, that's how you get hit with those 100 rounds of 45.
That's exactly. Yeah.
That's how you catch
next
those.
Time I go rabbit hunting, I have not been prepared.
You're going to have to get your Kimber out and pack it with you.
I don't even own more than two magazines for my Kimber. They want too much for them. It's ridiculous.
Now you got to get more magazines. I don't even own that many
I would like
magazines.
To have a 45 like that, though.
That's, yeah. That's I like this. I like the XDs.
Yeah.
I like all those. Mm-hmm. But I'm a 45 fan.
It's God's round, man. What are you talking about?
100%.
God's round.
100%.
All right, folks, that's about all the time we have for this episode. Do you have any cool stories you'd like to share with Cam and I? Do not hesitate. You can email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com.
Word.
You can call the hotline, 888-393-2783. Don't forget, if you want to help the show out, it's easy. It's free. All you have to do is go on YouTube, subscribe, go to all these other places that you listen, wherever you listen. Leave and like reviews.
Yeah.
If you want more Expanded Perspectives, don't forget about Expanded Perspectives Elite. You can go to Patreon and find us over there.
I got more Dog Man stories coming up.
And it supports the show also. If you really enjoyed the Glimmer Man stories, don't forget about our new Glimmer Man book. KMI and Lon Strickler have put out a Glimmer Man book.
Thanks to everybody.
Thanks to everybody.
Been ordering them.
I've already been shipping out signed copies. There's a few more of you I know that have emailed me. I have not responded yet, but I will be this next coming week and getting them out. Like Cam said in the last episode, just putting the title of the email, Big Fizzy, or
attention, book size, Big Fizzy,
stuff like that. And then there is a gentleman, I don't remember your name right now, on Patreon that contacted me that is somewhere in the UK. And I said, look, if you're willing to pay for the shipping, I'm willing to send it. I went to the post office. It's going to be like $150 to ship.
Goodness.
It's not worth our autograph. Trust me. Just order it on Amazon. Yeah. It's $15.
Dude, we're not that cool.
I understand it. Maybe if you come over to the States, we can send you one. But that's ridiculous for a book.
Now, what we could do is like autograph some stickers and mail it over. But that's...
Yeah. That yeah, would, that's a
but,
good idea.
But other yeah. than that, yeah, you're like, you don't want to do that.
The people that have
we're
been
getting, definitely not worth that.
The people that have been getting signed copies, I've been stuffing them with stickers.
No way, have you really?
If you're Patreon members.
Oh, shh. Don't tell everybody else.
Let's not forget about our wonderful sponsor, IQ Bar. Right now, IQ Bar
is in my tummy.
Right? They are giving you the ultimate sampler pack plus free shipping. Just go, you got to text the word expanded to the number 64,000. That's text the word expanded to 64,000. And you will get some amazing hydration drinks, bars, coffees.
Don't let your wife get to the coffee. You'll never get it back.
Right. Cam, what do you got going on the rest of this week? I showed up. I drove by your house the other day and I saw that you just mowed. I have to mow.
Yeah, I was trying to beat the rain, got the rain beat, the whole thing. I'm not really sure. My granddaughter's birthday... They're having her little birthday party coming up. We're going to have it. We're having it early so everybody can get together because we got a bunch of other
When's
stuff
her birthday?
Going on. Her birthday is the 23rd.
Of June?
Yes.
That's the same. So is June bugs.
Yeah.
How old is she going to be now?
Five.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. So she'll hit that.
She gave me a tattoo the other day.
She did. She hooked you up with a tattoo when you came by. Dude, she is eat up with art. And she has been That's since awesome. She got old enough to do like all she when she comes over, she's painting. She's drawing. Like we watch TV some. She's not a tablet game. She never gets tablets. None of that. She's not about electronics. She just doesn't care for them. But she goes crazy with the artwork, with all of that stuff. So I got her surprised because she loves like the temporary tattoos. You're and right, she loves yeah. my tattoos and all that. So I ordered like their kids' tattoos, but they're like full arm sleeves get them on Amazon. They're almost nothing for like they're with unicorns and like cats and all kinds of stuff, you know, and saw that. So, yeah. And if you ask her what she's going to be, a chef.
You should print herself some minis for her to paint with you.
I'm waiting for her to, when she gets a little bit bigger, where her deck's a little better. Because she's just a wild woman on the whole thing. But, yeah, she wants to. She wants to paint. So when she's a little bit bigger where she can really get in there
or start it. Get, like, the ceramics and buy yourself, like, a cheap kiln.
Well, see, her grandmother has been doing pottery now.
See?
So
I mean, that's
she's already doing all
that. I remember
stuff
when that
too.
Was a popular thing in the 80s. I think everybody's mother did that.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember we did it all through art school. I did a pile of pottery. I used to have all kinds of pottery that I made. I really enjoyed it when we were in school.
Nobody knits afghans no more. Remember? Everybody was knitting back in
the
day.
Yeah. There's still a lot of folks that are doing it. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. And I've never said why more people don't just try it. If you're knitting, like literally, you need some needles, a couple of those, and some yarn, and then you just start throwing loops.
Yeah, my grandmother used to make like these patchwork quilts. I used to love those things, man.
The Pasanki eggs is the things that I always remember.
Oh, the Ukrainian Easter eggs.
Man.
Yeah. My mom still does that.
Gosh, those are so awesome. You pull them up like, well, back when we were kids, nobody knew. Nobody knew what those were. You had to really be, in the religion, in the whole thing to even know what it was.
So just recently at the Doss Center, my mom and my aunts sold a bunch of them.
Are they going to be up there?
They've already done it. It was a couple months ago.
Oh.
They do it like once a year. Right around Easter.
Your mom and aunts are good, but they're not as good as your grandmother and her sisters.
Oh, yeah. Millie was the best.
That's what I was like. She was unbelievable. Those were museum quality stuff that she did. But I guess she did it her whole life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like with her mom. But her mom rode the boat to come over. So it was one of those That's deals. Right. It's like, I don't even know if she spoke English.
She did. But she also spoke Serbian perfectly. They all spoke Serbian.
Zora.
And I remember as a kid, they would try to get me to do it. And I didn't want to. Now I regret that. I'm like, man, it would have been nice.
Well, I remember when we were kids at your house, your mom would be sitting there at the kitchen table and have all that stuff laid out. Paid no attention to it. We're just like, this something. And then now I'm like... That's pretty cool. The way they do
it. Yeah, if you
want
to know what we're
cool.
talking about, Pasanki, it's Ukrainian Easter eggs. It's like a religious thing. You can check it out on Google and everything. I hope everybody out there has a safe week, like Cam said. Stock up on your fireworks.
But keep your fingers.
But be careful.
Yeah, and get ready to fish. It's time to go fishing, y'all. Take some kids and go to the water, catch some fish.
I was thinking that just the other day. I was like, man, I need to buy me another pole, do some bass fishing.
Let's go.
Here.
Hey, look, the strippers are picking up down there on PK.
My brother-in-law cleaned up the sand bass last week.
He caught a heck of a bass last week, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, he loves it.
Dude.
He lives right on the water, though.
Yeah, that was a heck of a fish. But if we go up to PK, we can paddle in and start catching strapper.
Sounds good. I want to go bow fishing at PK.
Yeah, I got to get rolled to break the boat out and we'll go.
You need to get that thing dialed in so when Ducks Unlimited wants to film something.
Yes, we can go shoot fish. Fishing. Heck yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Trailer that thing all the way to Florida.
Now you're talking, we'll come see Andrew down there and go take it offshore.
Oh, he'd lose his mind.
Now you're screaming. Right. I would drive down there just to take the boat just if I knew we could go do that.
I'm sure you could.
I would 100% take it and go down there just to go even out in the bay, start shooting sheep's head, go flounder gigging, something. Dude, 100%.
Yeah, those flats, that's where you get them.
100%. We're in there.
All right, folks. Hope everybody has a good week. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.